Hello, everybody, and welcome to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
And I'm Lee White.
And I'm Will Terry. And all three of us are professional illustrators, and for the past 25 years, we've worked with just about every major publisher in the business. We've also together published about 50 books and have all taught illustration at universities.
Yep. Each week we're going to tackle a different subject relating to illustration from our three perspectives. Sometimes we're going to agree, sometimes we're going to argue, but hopefully you're going to learn something new.
Okay. Nailed that intro, guys. Good job. We just finished recording a video for sfslearn.com, like an introduction video, and we could not do it. Like, we couldn't do it in one take.
It was only like 3 sentences a piece. And
it's because when you have to dance, you can't dance all of a sudden.
And we got an hour's worth of blooper reels from 3 sentences, basically.
Right, exactly. So I want to touch base. We haven't, it's been a couple weeks since we last recorded. I know for our audience, these come out every 2 weeks, but sometimes we record a bunch together, sometimes we spread them out. And it's been a couple of weeks since we talked. So I just want to know, what projects are you guys currently working on? How are things going? I'll tell you for myself, I am about waist deep into The Little Snowplow 2, which is a sequel to Snowplow. And I decided this is my first children's book where it's going to be completely digital. I'm not putting pencil to paper. I'm doing everything on the computer. It's been, I don't know, I'm really liking these results.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah. What about you, Lee? What are you working on?
I am finishing up writing a story. My agent went to Bologna, Italy. If you guys don't know about the SCBWI conference in Bologna, Italy. It happens every spring. It's a giant worldwide grouping of the children's book industry. And so my agent took a story that I wrote there and got a lot of interest. And so she came back here, and then she gave my story that I had already written to a professional editor, which is a nice little feature. I've never had an agent do that before. Gave it to an editor, and then I got the story back. And what I basically learned from this whole thing is I am a terrible writer, because the editor had every single line had changes, and I have to say every change I made was for the better. After her notes.
Yeah.
So at the end, I'm like, oh man, did I write a single sentence? I got the words "the end" correct. There was no edit on the end. Anyway, so I'm wrapping that up. And it's tough because she's got little notes, and then I have to figure out how to solve, you know, the problem that she's kind of highlighting. So I just submitted that yesterday, and we're getting that ready for a pitch to a select group of publishers.
Cool. Mm. So let me ask you, who foots the bill for that editor? Is that
the agent does?
Okay.
They've got an agent. They've got an editor on retainer, actually, and it's pretty killer.
So the agency it's just one of their monthly bills or something.
Yeah, I think they have enough people writing where it justifies it.
That's cool. Mm. I like that. All right, Will. What about you?
I am still working on the sequel to Bonaparte Falls Apart, and kind of got delayed a little bit, and now we're really hitting it hard. So deadlines are fast approaching for the first sketches. And then I'm also working on the board game that I can't really talk about, but it's a game on teaching children emotions. So that's a fun one. And then oh, sorry.
I don't think you've mentioned that to me. I didn't know you were doing that.
I don't know anything about
that. Did you mention
either.
It and I wasn't paying attention?
Probably. And then I'm in between, I'm trying to get stuff ready for our Comic-Con shows. And so there's always that. Always, you know, one of the challenges is always having new stuff, because what really surprised me with going to those conventions is how it's almost like, it shouldn't have surprised me actually, but how much repeat business I get. And so the same people will come from the year before, and they're like, okay, what do you have that's new? And, you know, if you don't have new stuff, then they're going to go,
oh man.
Yeah.
That's good. that's good. You got repeat customers. You got people interested.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. Well, let's move on to the topic. You guys good for this? You guys ready?
Let's do it.
We're ready.
Today, I wanted to talk about networking. And the reason for that is so far, we've talked a lot about craft and technique and how to manage, you know, your illustration business or whatever. What was that, Lee?
I broke my Sharpie. I'm always playing with a pen and I'm so bummed. I always break stuff. That was a little clip.
All right. You have to sit on your hands. You were the kid that had to sit on his hands, right? Like,
that's right.
Anyways, talent and ability and craft are only part of the equation. The rest of the, I guess, what you can devote your success to as a professional artist is your network. And here's why. There's actually a famous quote in business, I guess in entrepreneurism or whatever circle this I found this in, but the renowned businessman Jim Rohn once said, "You're the average of the five people you spend most of your time with." Okay, so think about that. The reason for that is the people you spend your time with influence you. They motivate you or they unmotivate you. They recommend things to you, whether it's job opportunities or things you should try. They're, you know, engaging with you. And if you're surrounding yourself with people who maybe aren't motivated or maybe don't have the same ideals and the same goals as you, it can be really hard for you to be to have access and to have the motivation that you need, access to the resources and the things that you need to be successful, you know, than if you were surrounded by a group that was elevating you. So your network is your connection to a broader world. Your network exposes you to new ideas, to opportunities, to fellow creatives, and to gatekeepers. And I think about this, every major jump that I've had in my career came because of the network that I'd built for myself. So my first job was with Fox Animation, and that came about because I kept in touch with my high school art teacher, and I would show him my work, and this was, you know, this was after high school, and I was taking a class and some classes in college, and I would still touch base with him, and he looked at what I was doing, and he said, "You know what? I have a former student who now works at Fox. You should call him up and see if he can't get your portfolio to the right people." And so I would have never been able to get a foot into that studio if it wasn't for a friend of a friend, right? This network that I'd built. And the same goes for my work in comics. I made friends in sort of this indie comic scene in LA, and we created a comics anthology called Flight. And that led to me getting an agent, and that agent has led me to getting, you know, 10 plus book deals over the year, 12 or 13 book deals over the year, plus other things. Now she's helping me out with Inktober and managing Inktober and things like that. That all came from building this network. My job with Blue Sky came through building a network. SVS, same thing. It all started with having lunch with Will Terry one day. And who knew? Did you know where that lunch would go, Will?
No idea, but I have this thing where I want to include friends that are doing amazing things in my circle. Mm-hmm. And you were really interesting, like from the first time I met you and the first time you turned us down for Folio Academy. I was like, that jerk, there's something about him. Because you were like playing hard to get or something. And so I was like, I got to work hard to get this guy in my friend circle.
And then we found Lee. Lee kind of online networked with us. And in a roundabout way, Lee sort of came to us through an online contact. We hadn't met Lee in person until maybe a year after we were working together.
Yeah.
Would that be?
Yeah, at least. But like, yeah, I contacted Jake and Will as basically a cold call because I didn't want to, uh-huh. I mean, and that's kind of what I wanted to kind of offer up. I know Jake's going to be going through all kinds of networking stuff, but almost everything that I've done hasn't been passive networking. It's been very, very active networking in that I want something, like I wanted to teach an online class. I sure didn't think it was going to end up, you know, with the whole school. I just wanted to teach one class. And I thought to myself, I don't want to do this by myself. That was my, I just remember that was a conscious thought. And I was like, who else is doing this? I want to team up with other people just because it's more enjoyable. I didn't think of it like as a networking opportunity per se. I just thought, I just want to do something. People, groups of people have momentum. Kind of like the you guys ever watch cycling? And the Peloton is just, that's the big group of cyclists, that big group. Yeah. And it's very hard for people do break away from that group and sometimes win. But most often, the big group always catches those people. And I think that it's a good analogy.
Yeah, they're helping each other.
Right. They're all drafting off each other. They're pushing the pace. It's just real hard to break away from that. I think the same is true for just being around people. They either pull you along or I guess they could stop you as well. So you want good influences over bad. Right.
Yeah.
So for me, here's how I define a network. It's at its core, it is your friends in whatever industry you're in. Okay. And I don't want people to think of the network as the network that they have. It's anything less than that. These people aren't your job hotline. You can't just call them up when you're in need and say, hey, help me out. A true network is your buds, like your group of friends. Okay. Is that how you guys look at network? Is that how you guys kind of see it?
Can I interject a really quick story?
Yeah, please.
So in teaching illustration a bunch of different years, I would have, for some reason, the chemistry in the class, there'd be a little pocket of students that was usually led by one person who did not want to do what they were doing. They didn't want to be illustrators for some reason, but they were in an illustration major. And so they would, it's just so bizarre, but they would actually lead a small faction against working hard. And I would actually see some of these kids getting sucked into negativity, sucked into, you know, well, this other person just, you know, these other people think they're going to be illustrators. Look at them wasting their time. Just negative stuff like that. And I'm like, this is being led by one person. And you guys who have joined this group don't realize what kind of stagnation you're going through right now. Like you're just wasting your time here, you know, and it's all because of the network.
That's so toxic.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
What about you, Lee?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a good way to, I like what you said about the people aren't your job hotline. I mean, that's an important distinction in that it's not just a one-way street. Most of the time, a good networking group, each person brings something and can offer something. And you don't ever want to be around people where you're always the one saying, hey, let's go do this conference. Hey, let's all go take this class. Hey, let's go to this workshop. Otherwise it's unbalanced. Or if you're, if you're just somebody who's always asking for something from somebody, you're typically going to get a drop from that network.
Yeah. I like that. The energy from your group isn't coming from one person, but you're all sort of feeding off of each other. I think that's really good. There's a Calvin and Hobbes strip where Calvin and Hobbes are in a wagon and they're roaring down the hill, and Calvin's doing, he's pining about something. He's talking about something. He says, they say the secret of success is being at the right place at the right time. But since you never know when the right time is going to be, I figure the trick is to find the right place and just hang around. So that right there is a good enough punchline. But then he finishes off, being with you is just one epiphany after another. That's what Hobbes says. And then Calvin says, if you're in the right place, and if the right place is in front of the drugstore, we could read comic books while we wait. Nice. But I like that outlook. You never know what the right time is, but you can always put yourself in the right place. And eventually something will happen if you're in the right place. Eventually that right time will come. And I like to think, I want to ask you guys, do you think in this day and age, do you need to live in a trendy place or like a creative hotspot in order to be successful?
That's a good one.
And we talked about that a little bit on one of the other podcasts. I can't remember what we said, but I mean, I think the ultimate answer we came up with is sort of.
Yeah. Because for me personally, I was stagnating where I was living in California, and I don't want to name the town because I don't want to bag on a town or an area, because I think a lot of it was my own fault. But when I moved back here to Utah, there's such a vibrant artist community. And that's when I met you, Jake, and I met a bunch of other artists. And since forming SVS, just being in the building that we're in, we're meeting new and creative people every day. Like, wouldn't you say, Jake, that like the people, right. the caliber yeah. of people that come through here, and like some will just bound up the stairs and like, what's going on in here? And then, you know, we'll ask them what they do, and they're like working on a major production for some important thing. And it's like, whoa, you know, like, and this is happening all the time. So I can say for me, that wouldn't have happened where I was living before. However, I do think that you can really put yourself in a lot of really good places online to meet people.
I don't think it can be totally online, though. I think the origin of the group can be online, but I think there does have to be some kind of physical component, whether you're meeting at Comic Cons or whether you're meeting at workshops or whatever. I think it's hard to have just an online community and that being it. You know, I'm in an interesting point right now that I haven't been at in a long time because I'm moving on Friday, moving to Nashville, Tennessee, and I haven't lived there. And I grew up there, but I haven't lived there in 25 years. Which is amazing because I'm only 26. but I don't have an art community there. And so this topic of networking is really interesting to me right now, because what started to happen is, as I talk to my agent and as I talk to other people around Portland or whatever, they say, hey, you know, where are you gonna be this summer? Oh, I'm moving to Nashville. Invariably, that person says, oh, hey, you should meet my friend who lives right there and does this and that. I mean, just for my agent, there's two artists under the agency that are already in Nashville. So I already reached out to them, again, trying to be active. I said, hey, I'm coming to Nashville and we're both rep by the same person. Do you want to grab a coffee? And so it's just starting for me, but I have to start over again, just like we all do, you know?
Yeah, that's cool. And I want to reiterate, too, with what Will said. I've lived in LA. I've lived in close to New York, or in that New York metropolitan area. I've lived in Dallas. I've lived in Phoenix. All of these cities, and now in Provo, Utah, all of these cities have some bigger than others, but they all have like a creative community. And you have to figure out a way to insert yourself into that. And so I want to talk about different ways that you can take advantage of the area that you live in to build a network of friends in whatever industry that it is that you're trying to pursue, whether it's illustration or comics or film or editorial or anything like that. First thing I think is to utilize the online sphere, right? That's an easy way to find out what's going on. And one thing to do is to search by location. So you can find people who live in your area just by checking hashtags for whatever city that you live in, and maybe checking hashtags, you know, scrolling through those posts and seeing if anybody's posting art, right? So it's kind of like fishing. Once you do find someone, follow them, like their work, subscribe to whatever there is they're doing, whether it's YouTube videos or whatnot. Comment on posts that they've made, share posts that they've made, even send direct messages. And eventually what this person will start seeing is, oh, here's a person who's willing to engage, who wants to engage. And if you get any sort of reciprocating follow or likes or anything like that, you've got a lead on someone that could possibly be a new friend in this, you know, network that you're building. Do you guys have any other like pointers as far as online?
I'd like to talk a little bit about the SVS forum that we set up. It's free, svslearn.com. It's just go to the forum if you want to check it out. And it's been shocking to me how close that community has gotten with each other. I didn't expect that. I mean, I knew people were going to be putting cool artwork up there. I knew there'd be crits going on, but I just didn't anticipate how everybody would get to know each other in a way. They know each other's work and they comment about, you know, they could, they'll put up a sketch and they'll say, oh no, I liked your other piece that you did, you know, 2 months ago. I'm like, oh yeah, they're all following each other. They all know each other in a weird way, through the work and through the commenting and all that stuff. And then, Jake, when you came out here to do a reading, it was like 12 of them at the reading from the forums.
That was really cool.
and I hadn't, it's amazing to see that. And I just, it just was unexpected. And I think the forums are an interesting place to, be on an even playing field and to kind of just talk about the work in a very low pressure situation. Yeah.
Will, what about you? How do you network online?
Lee kind of took mine in a way. I mean, I really like forums. I like the, I love our SPS forums. I've been several Facebook groups. I used to be a little bit more active than I am now. It's funny because, you know, having a YouTube channel and being kind of high profile, I've actually been disinvited to post in a few forums. Like, I've had people question, like, why do you need to post your art when the rest of us are trying to get attention? You know, like, so it's, that's been a little bit weird. But I mean, I generally use my Facebook for my art. I use it both for personal and art. I have a really, I feel like I have a good mix. And whenever I do a new piece of art, I post it on Facebook. And I have actually gotten, in fact, that's where the board game job that I'm working on now came from, was the Facebook post. So, you know, I mean, like that.
Whoa, that's
cool.
And
I've gotten other jobs from it and just made a ton of friends. I would say if I go through my friends list, which on Facebook is full of, on, you know, the 5,000, there's a ton of artists that I have in my list that I've talked to that I've never met in person. And that have led to really cool collaborations or meetups when I go to other cities and things like that. So it's, I mean, I would not discount the online thing at all for networking.
Right.
And those people come through occasionally. I mean, like, I know everybody's bagging on Facebook a little bit right now. And there seems to be a little bit of an exodus away from it because it's so, it's such a charged place. But I can say this, that like, I just like Will, when I do stuff, new stuff, I post it, you know, or if a book comes out or whatever, make a little announcement. When I needed the people from Facebook, when I ran my Kickstarter, I'd say Facebook was probably 85% of my backers.
Me too. Yep.
That's awesome. Well, that's cool. So I kind of feel like online interaction can be deep to a certain point. But at some point, you need to find people that you can actually meet with face to face and solidify relationships face to face a little bit better. So, one of the things I was thinking, one of the things I've done in the past to find people are going to actual networking events. So, these could be anything like Comic-Con or a conference that's related to, you know, illustration or whatever creative field that you're doing. Also attending presentations. Sometimes in your area, there might be, like for example, here in Provo, there's a thing called the Creative Collaborative and they meet every, I think once a month, every Tuesday, the first Tuesday or the second Tuesday of a month. And what they do is they invite some creative from the community to present what they've been working on and to share what they've been doing. And people around town are able to go and watch this and meet other people who are interested in that person and what they're doing. And it's just a great way to meet people.
How do you guys, when you're talking about that kind of event, I'm just trying to be practical because like, you hear that all the time, go to an event, meet people, talk about it. It's, do you guys get nervous in that situation ever? And like, what's a way to get over the nerves? Like, I'm just thinking of somebody who goes to an event for the first time, they might not know anybody. And just talking in that scenario sometimes is terrifying.
Okay, so here's a suggestion. If you're good at drawing, be drawing your notes in there. Because then the people next to you are going to be seeing you drawing. That's an icebreaker. If you're super introvert, like you wear the cape, super introvert man, right?
Yeah.
And it's such an icebreaker because people cannot resist. You'll see them looking off to the side. checking out your drawing. And then when the thing's over, I really love what you were drawing there. What was that? You know, are you an illustrator? You know?
Yeah. I like that kind of interaction. I'll tell you the times in physical interaction where I get the most nervous. I mean, I can talk, I swear, my wife will attest to this. I can talk to a wall for 2 hours without a problem. I mean, I'm pretty good at just keeping dialogue going. But man, the more formal a situation becomes without a direct focus, like I love going to workshops and classes because there's always like a thing to talk about. Like there, did you see what that guy just did? Oh my God, how do you do that? Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of is the language. But when it's just like a cocktail party and I don't know anybody, man, those things make me nervous.
I'm no stranger to that too. There's a handful of icebreakers that I have that I've used that I think work not only like in those situations, but also like Comic-Con when people are walking past the table or they're standing there and you're like, you don't want to say, hey, are you going to buy something? Or, you know,
right.
So usually I think with any one of these events, first off, know why you're there. You know, are you curious about the person who presented? Are you wanting to make friends? Are you wanting, you know, if it's a convention, a comic book convention, are you there to meet your fan base if you have a fan base? You know, so knowing that can kind of help you formulate how you approach people. And so usually just a hard and fast, easy one is to just ask a person, have you done this before? Have you been to one of these before? And if they're like, no, I've never been to one before, then you could be like, well, what'd you think? Or if they have been to one before, you could say like, well, how did this compare to the other ones? And that gets a conversation going because now they have an invested interest in like sharing their knowledge with
you. So you're saying have a couple of pre-planned kind of starters plan. I like that. Actually, I want to add to that, have a couple of exit moves too, because when I was at the Society of Illustrators conference in New York this past fall, I didn't plan any exit strategies. And so all of a sudden, like say I would enter a conversation with somebody that I know and then somebody I don't know. And the person that I know would then get pulled away for some reason. And then now I'm standing with the person who I don't really know. And it's super awkward. And I didn't plan my exit strategies. And so it was super awkward.
You could try
Do you have a strategy
now? I'm
going
to make
it
more awkward thing to get a laugh. So you say, this is awkward. We don't really know each other, but yet we're standing here. Not knowing each other.
I would never, ever say that. No.
I would do that.
That sounds like totally a Will Terry move.
That is a Will Terry move.
So here's my Comic-Con enter and exit strategies, right? And I think these also work for conferences or if you're at one of these meetups or something like that. So I always ask, what's the coolest thing you've seen here?
I've heard you say that before.
It works great. So someone's walking by and our eyes meet or something like that. If they're carrying a cool print or they've got a cool t-shirt, I will either comment on what they're carrying or where did you get that? That's so cool. And then they come over. I'll be like, so what's the coolest thing you've seen here? And then they're starting to tell me, oh, this guy over here did this. She does this awesome work over here. And that starts a conversation going. And then when it's going too long or you're in a situation where you're like, okay, I need to move on. My favorite thing is as soon as there's a pause, just say, man, it was so good to meet you. And that
it's already the wrap up. I love that.
Yeah. You just wrap it up. And you don't even have to say, I have to, like, I'm at my table.
Right.
I can't go anywhere, but I'll just put out my hand and say, oh, it was so good to meet you. And it catches them off guard a little bit, but they're like, oh yeah, they kind of get the point that maybe there's three other people waiting to talk to me, you know, shake the hand.
You should do that. If it's just somebody, just one person there, you should say, oh, it's so nice to meet you. And then just turn around where they're your best.
Yeah.
Hey, here's another tip. People self-sift themselves into groups. So like when you're at a presentation mm-hmm. where someone's speaking, the people that go up to meet the presenter at the end are the ones who are super interested in that subject.
Mm.
So if you go up and stand in that line when you're waiting to meet the presenter, you all have something in common to talk about. And it's just natural that you're talking in line as you're waiting to meet that person.
That's a good point. My dad actually taught me something. Have you guys ever heard of FORM? It's an acronym, FORM. This is something my dad taught me, and I've since gone on to see it's pretty common use. There's some pretty common usage in activities like this where you need to meet people. But what it stands for is family, occupation, recreation, and motivation, or your message. And that's the order that you kind of run through things. So you can ask someone about their family. So, you know, are you here alone or did you bring someone with you? Where are you from? Are you the only artist in your family? You know, pretty soon they're like, well, my mom was a great painter and I wanted to be just like her, you know, and then you can move into occupation. So what do you do for a living? What specific branch of art are you into, or is it a hobby or whatever? And then you move into recreation. Well, what do you like to do for fun? Are you a skydiver? Are you into model building? Whatever. Yeah. All of these things are a way to really get them warmed up to you and warmed up in the conversation. And then you can start asking, well, what motivates you? You know, what? Why are you here? Why do you create? Why did you decide to draw, children's books or whatever it is? And it just works great. It's just a perfect conversation tool. So,
question to ask in almost any setting, so which always gets kind of interesting results, is if you had a useless superpower, what would it be?
Oh, that's great.
Like, it wouldn't be everybody's always got some talent that's just totally mm-hmm. useless. And it's always interesting. Like, I'm going to tell you guys what mine is.
What is it? What is it, Lee?
I can throw, see, here's how the dialogue starts if we were yeah. strangers. I can throw food, any kind of food, like say like a cherry tomato, it's a good one, or a grape, as high as I possibly can throw, like a baseball throw, and catch
no
it.
No way.
Really?
Yeah, it has no practical application, but it's impressive.
Okay,
when you see it.
It does if you were on the run and you had to get under a fence and eat at the same time. You could throw it up before you go through the hole.
Yeah, because you can't be carrying your grapes with you.
Maybe.
When you come out here in a couple weeks or a week, it's soon, right? You're definitely going to have to demonstrate that. I want to see that.
Oh, I won't film it. Yeah, we'll put it on the website. But it's always interesting to hear, like, if people could either a real one that they actually have, or like if they had a superpower, but it has to be useless, what would it be? And it's an interesting yeah. little question.
Mine is so I can that. Recite all the prepositions in alphabetical order in 15 seconds.
Let's hear it.
That's a pretty good superpower.
I just don't want to do it on this. You know, it's
we've
like,
derailed,
it's like
but
you're
I'm
making me perform.
Okay, mine.
You're not paying for this.
Okay, if you see Will Terry in person, you got to ask him that. Ask him to do that.
I'll do it for you if you ask.
Okay, mine is I've got those thumbs that bend backwards. So, you know, a lot of people have just straight thumbs. My thumbs, both of them just like bend completely backwards.
That's gross.
Okay. Yeah, we'll put it on the blog.
looks Photoshop.
God, that looks freaky.
All right, so we've talked about networking online, networking at events. Another way that you can meet people is you yourself can organize a dinner party or a lunch meetup, or go to one that someone else has organized. And that's another way. It's a little bit more intimate. I think we're moving down the line from superficial to intimate here. So that's a great way to put into practice these conversation icebreakers and conversational tactics. And then I think the next level of intimacy would be to create a critique group. And this is a group where you guys might meet once a month or once every other week, and you critique each other's work. We talked about critiques last week a little bit, but I think this is a good way to find artists that are motivated, may have similar goals as you, and are going to challenge you.
Draw lunch.
Yeah. Tell us about draw lunch.
I love the draw lunches that you guys did. That's so cool.
Yeah. It gets started by a friend of mine that I went to school with, and it just grew. It kind of peaked last year, but we would just go to the mall and they have a food court. And so a lot of us will just, you know, buy something in the food court, and then they can't really kick you out because you're a customer. Uh-huh. But they don't even want to kick us out now. They're like, you guys are all the cleaning staff like know us now. Like, you guys draw. Why do you guys draw? But it's just cool because we have professionals show up. We have university art teachers. We have students. We have, like I said, people that work in-house, people that freelance. And it's basically I think what it is the, you know, as artists, we kind of tend to feel lonely sometimes in what we do. And it's rare. Like I'm assuming that like, if you're an accountant, you're stuck in a, you're always in a group of lots of accountants at work, you know, but when we work at home, we're not ever in that environment usually. So right. It's just cool to get out and see what other people are doing. And then we've made a lot of connections, met a lot of people in those groups.
That's cool. Yeah.
And you've got some heavy hitters in that group too. I mean, besides you two, it's you know, Mel Milton and Guy Francis and
Rodney Bills.
Yeah, some good.
Yeah, if we start naming Holly Hibbert, if we start naming them, Marin
Roos. Yeah.
Gosh, we're leaving out
Nate Barch.
Huge numbers of talented people,
I think.
Yeah, Nate Barch.
Anyway, yeah. So draw lunches are good. You could do a draw dinner or something like that. The next deeper level would be, I think this might be one of the deepest levels of forming this network, is to set up just one-on-one coffees or lunches or dinners or drinks or something like that, where you're just meeting with one person and the two of you for an hour can really get to know each other. And I think those are great. You know, if someone's willing to give you an hour and you're willing to give someone else an hour, you might both be able to walk away from something, having formed a friendship or something close to a friendship.
Try to do that with people that are around your same skill level or ability or interest, because I just wanted to add the little asterisk to that one. And a lot of times I'll get an email from a student basically wanting to go to coffee with me, but really they just want me to tell them how to do everything for an hour. It's not an equal exchange.
So that's actually a great transition to the next thing. So networks are made up of three different kinds of people. All right. In your network, you should have mentors, you should have friends, and you should have followers. And I want to talk about what each one of those are. So a mentor is anyone who is ahead of you in life or in their career or in their achievement or in their success. So they may even be younger than you, but they've achieved more than you. They're a mentor because they have knowledge that you don't have. Okay. So they're like if you have arrows pointing up, arrows pointing directly side to side, and arrows pointing down, mentors would be the arrows pointing up. Then you have friends, and these are arrows pointing side to side. These is anyone who is in the trenches with you. These are people around your same level who are trying to figure out where they should go next, just like you're trying to figure out where you should go next. And then lastly, you have followers. So this is anyone who looks up to you as a mentor or who appreciate and support your work. And I think these people are just as valuable as your mentor is to you as well. And so here's what I want to talk about, is how you connect with these three different groups. We've talked about where you could do these kinds of things, you know, conventions or conferences or critique groups and things like that. But here's how you actually make those connections. And first, I want to preface this with this one thought. And if this is what the only thing that you pull away from this podcast, it's this quote. It's by Jeff Goins. It's from his book, Real Artists Don't Starve, which I highly recommend every creative person read. It's such a good book. But he says, it's not who you know, it's who you help. And if you look at all of your friendships and all of your networking through that lens, not who you know, but who you're actually helping, you're going to benefit so much more from this situation. And they're going to benefit from knowing you as well. So first, mentors. First off, before you do anything, do your homework on what your mentor already offers. Maybe they do YouTube videos. Go watch all of their YouTube videos before you contact them in person. If they're a blogger, read their blog posts. If they've written books, buy a copy of their book, read it, take notes in it. If they offer workshops, sign up for one of their workshops and go to it. If they offer online classes, sign up for one of their online classes and attend it. Asking them to give you something for nothing, if they make part of their living from mentoring, from formalized mentoring, it's just not a good move to say, hey, can we meet for lunch? I'll pay for lunch, but will you tell me all your secrets, you know?
Well, and the other thing is, it's inefficient, because So for instance, for myself, I've given my whole process on how I paint digitally, and I put it out there in videos form, and I sell it. Now it's super complete, but I'll have someone email me and say, can you explain your whole process?
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's like, if I had to type that out in an email, it would take pages and pages. It would take more than a day for me to type that out. So what are you really asking? You know what I mean? Like, and it's already laid down, and it's relatively very inexpensive to just get that information in a more professional delivered way with video and explanations and, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, like, and I don't get upset when someone does that, because I figure there was a time in my life where I would have totally done the same thing.
They might not even know that they may have seen your website or found you on Instagram, not know that you've got a YouTube video.
Exactly.
But that's why it's important. I mean, there's a level of research to do, not just on the person, but also on the subject matter when you're looking for a mentor. You know, sometimes people come to me with children's book questions, either writing or illustrating, that they just lay out this general question, like Will was just saying. They say, you know, like, how can I be a children's book illustrator? And then, you know, my response to that is, you know, you tell me everything you know up to this point, and then let's get into some specific questions. And a lot of times that'll be just met with a blank stare. They haven't done anything.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
It would be like going to a carpenter and saying, how do I become a good carpenter? And it's like, and right. You know what I mean? Like, you've got to ask better questions.
What saw do you use?
I mean, a better question would be, if I wanted to do what you're doing, what would you say the first step would be?
Well, this is the next step is, what is the first thing you ask? So don't just ask, I have a question, can you help me? Really, what's in it for them to help you? You can't always rely on people's like altruistic natures. But instead, ask the question, then provide three solutions and ask them to pick. So it shows that you're proactive. This eases the burden on them, and it shows that you've already exhausted like your own ideas. So you could say, listen, I'm interested in becoming an illustrator. I don't know where to start. So I'm thinking, do I do online schools? Do I sign up for a university program? Or do I just do like how to draw books? And then you maybe go into a little more detail. Here's some of the schools I've picked. Here's some of the things. And if I got that email and someone had done all this homework and they referenced a video where I may have talked about it a little bit, I'm more likely to answer that and say, yeah, your answer B is like the best answer right there. This is what you should do. And I'd temper it with that, you know, answer A or whatever. Do you guys feel the same way? Is that?
Yeah, because the other thing is, if they have no investment in their email, then if you give them an investment in your answer, you will hear zero from them after that. Yeah. And not like you're doing it for a pat on the back, not like you're doing it for the kudos, but it's like nothing invested, nothing gained, right? Like,
right. So I want to talk about Rachel Everett, and she is a young artist here in Provo. I guess she lives just south of us, but I want to talk about how she got ingrained into my life. She's maybe in her early 20s, currently going to school. And instead of her coming up to me and just saying, hey, you know, teach me how to draw, one of our first interactions was she came to one of my workshops, and she learned from a workshop that I was holding. And then maybe it was 6 months later, I don't know the full timeline, she came up to my table at Comic-Con and introduced herself. And I don't know if you remember, but I came to your workshop. I loved what you did. Can I commission you to draw one of my characters for my comic? And I was taking commissions, and I said, yeah, sure. And so for about an hour, the time that took for me to draw this character, to do this commission, I'm researching her and her work and trying to find pictures of her character so I can understand it and draw it well. You know, I'm on my phone like, okay, who is she again? Okay, what's her comic about? How should I draw her character? So now, like, I'm spending time invested into her world. And then I've created something for her, and I give it to her, and she's super happy, and I'm super happy because she likes what I did. Okay. So then the next time that we met, she was tabling again where I was tabling, and I saw her and I was like, oh yeah, that was the girl I did the commission for. I want to see what she's doing. And she had drawn one of my characters and showed it to me and, you know, she had a print of it. And she gave me one of the prints, and I just thought it was, number one, a cool drawing. I have it up on my wall right now. And number two, I just thought it was so cool that she took the time out to do one of my characters. Okay.
You sued her for copyright infringement.
I didn't. No, it was cool. Anyways, then the next step was she emailed me and said, hey, I'm sort of in between working and going to school, and I have some times in my afternoons. I was wondering if I could help you work on Skyheart. I could do colors. I could do scanning. I could do whatever. And she didn't ask for anything in return. And I was like, okay, yeah. So every week for two days a week for like, I don't know, 3 months, she was coming into my studio helping me color Skyheart and working on it. And now I'm really invested in her and I want to know what she's working on. And I want to know how her comic's going. And she's bringing me her comics and saying, hey, what is this? You know, how can I make this better? And what ended up happening was I have a connection at Marvel, one of the editors there. And I contacted that editor at Marvel because I felt like Rachel was to the point where she could work on a Marvel comic. And I connected those two. And now she's doing a test for Marvel to get work from Marvel. And so that was like her long con was, I don't even know if she knew that it would lead to that eventually someday, but she started out by first doing her homework, then trying to serve and do something for me. And in return, I wanted to help her. And that was like a picture perfect example of how you network with a mentor. And I still feel like there's a mentor-mentee relationship to us, but we're also friends. We're also, I feel like at some point she's going to be so good, I'll probably come to her for advice. You know, what should I do next in my career?
You know I'm going to have to claim her as well. She was one of my students at UVU. And she was a rock star. Yes. She was one of the two that stood out right from the beginning. And
so be a Rachel. So the first thing is do your homework. The next thing is offer a win-win proposition. The third thing is follow through with what your mentor advises you to do and then follow up with them. So if it is that you've done something for them and they've given you advice, you come back and say, look, I did your advice. What do you think? You don't want to be a disappointment. This is a huge opportunity. They've let you into their life, and for you to disregard their advice or abandon the advice is the best way to never have that mentor help you again. So report back to them, tell them results, and for Pete's sake, thank them. Be thankful. So that's mentors. All right, next, friends. All right, how do you make friends in the industry? First thing is to just find common interests. And there's first superficial stuff. So you guys could have common interests on entertainment, on recreation, on subject matters that you're into, genres that you like consuming, I guess. The second level is the more of the deep stuff. Then you start connecting with people on what are their ideals, what are their goals, what are their values. Okay, so the ideal is what's your vision as an artist? What do you want to do? And so my ideals are I want to have creative freedom. I want to be a creator that has both critical and financial success. Now, my goals are what I want to accomplish. So I want to draw graphic novels. And then my values are what I believe in. And these are usually the things that you believe in are usually how you accomplish your goals to reach your ideal. So my values are solid work ethic, to produce more than I consume, to have good time management, and the mastery of craft. So these are my ideals, my goals, and my values. And if I find someone who is a match on these three things, we're friends. And it doesn't matter if they love horror films and they swear like a sailor, and I love Pride and Prejudice, and I never say a swear word. Like, what it is we connect on the deeper stuff, the stuff that really matters. And so I love to be around creators who want to have creative freedom, who want to be independent creators. I love being around people who want to draw graphic novels. I love being around people who have good work ethic and who want to try and master their craft. We could talk about those things. What about you guys as far as that regard?
In terms of who you want to be around?
Yeah, finding a friend.
I don't know. I don't have any friends. I'm just kidding. One of the things that kind of goes hand in hand with that is how you work. And I want to back all the way up to college. I just dropped my Sharpie, if you heard that. All the way up to college. I used to meet with like seven people. Seven of us. We called ourselves the Seven Foxes for some reason. And nice. Every week we would meet together and we'd work together. And we just go through school together. We were just going through all the assignments together. And that became such a great thing because when you're illustrating and you're painting for so long, there's all these conversations that are happening outside of painting and everybody's just filling in backgrounds and stuff and just talking about whatever, movies and whatever. And this deeper bond happens during these moments. And then, you know, as I left school, that kind of disbanded a little bit. But then over time, I've had these shared workspaces and stuff. And those, I just kind of look to that. And those are still people that I created the deepest bonds with that are also in the industry because we're around each other for so long and we're creating together. It's not just a conversation that happens once a week or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's this ongoing relationship. And it was very, again, active with seeking it out, saying, hey, we should all make a studio or we should all meet at the coffee shop every day and we'll draw mm-hmm. for an hour. And it just becomes this everyday thing. And that's just tended to work the best for me. I mean, out of that group that I had in school, I still talk to those people and I'm now still working with those people too, now that we're all pros and mm-hmm. have been for a long time. We just had one of them teach for us, Jamie Zollers, and she was awesome. And that all started in school where we happened to be sitting next to each other and then we decided to work together as students. And then that, you know, carried forward. So just an important thing. And like, you know, I just noticed you guys that Will and Jake are in a studio together. And then when I go to Nashville, I'm also in a shared studio. It doesn't have any illustrators, but it does have furniture designers and architects and graphic designers and who knows who they know mm-hmm. and what their lives are like. And so I'm looking forward to that because that just long, slow time together, you know, in an office all day making stuff and everybody's making different stuff can be the deepest bond in my opinion.
That's yeah. cool. Yeah.
I want to say that it's to me, it starts like what you're talking about, Lee, is super important. You know, we're later on in our careers. We're at the point where we have the means to share a studio and different things like that. But I think it starts way before that. As a teacher, I'd watch certain students come into the class with their headphones on and try to stay a satellite mm-hmm. to the rest of the class, you know, just try to, you know, for whatever reason, I'm thinking of a few, I can see their faces right now. I can't remember their names and I'll bet you a lot of the other students don't even know who they are, but they would come into class. As soon as we'd start working on a project, they would put their headphones right. on and they would not participate in any group conversation. They, a lot of times didn't know what was going on in the studio classes because, you know, even though we're drawing or painting on something, we're also talking about something illustration related and they're completely tuned out because they've got the music on. And I think you can make a general statement and that is like, you know, if you go to an SEBWI conference, which is Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, they have some crazy statistic and I can't remember what it is, but it's something like, I'm not even going to guess, a certain percentage of their members get published and they claim that it's higher than people who don't go to their organization. And they have these, I bet you if you polled 100 children's book authors, one thing they would all have in common is that they all attend or 98 or 90% of them attend SCBWI conferences. My point is, there's a general correlation between successful people and people who network. And I would assume that there are very few successful artists, illustrators mm-hmm. who don't have a network, you know? And so it is, to me, it is so important to plug in, to get in, to find yourself getting into the group somehow. And if you, I would say if you have a really hard time being part of the group, you know, it could be you. Maybe there's something that you're doing. I mean, like everybody knows people who are very narcissistic. I mean, you know, this goes deeper. Like, you know, you might need to do a self-evaluation of yourself, but you know, you might need to figure out, like, if you have a hard time making friends, mm-hmm. networking, if you can identify what those things are, maybe you can work on them. And if you work on them, maybe you can change it around.
I think just normal, like, friend stuff is key here. So if a person needs backed up on something, you know, they're in an argument or something went wrong, if you back them up, that all of a sudden, like, establishes a relationship of trust between you and that person. And other things like keeping promises, being supportive, just being into them. You know, what'd you post today? I saw your post. I thought that was so cool. And helping them with stuff. Those are like key things to really...
Not being a taker. Yeah,
exactly.
You know, like, I mean, there's just like all those life things that you should have already learned and you should be better at. And none of us are perfect, but there are things that are friend and networking repellent. And then there are things that are, you know, law of attraction stuff, right? Yeah. And you got to be going towards that law of attraction stuff.
Cool. Well, we talked about finding mentors, finding friends, now finding followers. And I think this is just as helpful to have a network of followers as well. You never know what is going to happen there. You know, they could lead to work, or they could lead to backing a Kickstarter project, or they could lead to showing up for a book signing. All of these things that could be beneficial to you as a creator come from building and maintaining a following. And so it's the same principle. It's not about who these people are or how many of these people there are, but it's about what you do for them, okay? So I want to talk about the steps there. First thing is just do your thing and let the tribe form around you, okay? And part of that is choosing a platform that you could be present on. This would be whether it's social media, whether it's your blog, whether it's YouTube, but whatever it is, be consistent on that platform. And if you're there doing your thing, eventually people are going to start following you and be interested in that. So while you're doing that, connect in an authentic and vulnerable way. You don't have to be too vulnerable, but you do have to be authentic. And so you could say, you could do things like share your process. Some people don't like to show how the sausage is made, but I like doing that. I like showing, like, here's my nasty sketch and here's how I fixed it and turned it into something cool. Share your process, share who's inspiring you, share your aha moments, like, oh, this is when everything connected. Share your screw-ups. You know, I talked about my cover that I did that nobody liked. And I showed a video of my family, like, totally tearing it down, right? So share as much of your life as you feel comfortable doing. Okay, so third thing would be to love them up, all right? Sometimes less is more. 100 people with a solid connection to them, you and them, might be better than 10,000 people where you don't have a solid connection, where it's kind of thin. So do things like give shout outs to individuals. Hey, I just want to thank so-and-so for following me. Thank you for always liking. You got the best comments. And people love that. You could promote projects that other people are doing. Always, when you have the time, respond back with comments. And if it's a person who you're into their work or what they're doing, follow them back. Follow what they're posting as well. All right. So the next thing is have a shared purpose of collective power. Okay. And I think this is something that maybe sometime artists overlook or get wrong. So what is the one thing that you and your followers all believe in and want to promote? Okay, this all comes back to what are your ideals, what are your goals, and what are your values. So, for example, I started Inktober, and I think one of the reasons Inktober got so big and got such a huge following because it was about drawing in ink and promoting drawing in ink and not worrying about color and not worrying about pencil and not paint or watercolor or anything like that, but just focusing on ink. And that's something that a community can rally behind and share their work and help people learn how to do it. And things like that. And for my personal brand, for my Jake Parker brand, my whole shtick is building a universe one drawing at a time. And so what that is I'm trying to get people who follow me, I think, want to support independent creators. And that's like our shared purpose. When they buy a book of mine, when they back a Kickstarter project, when they buy a print, they know that they're not buying something from a faceless corporation that's just trying to make money. They're buying something from an independent artist who's trying to make money. Okay. So those, if you can somehow build your brand around that shared purpose that your followers can believe in, that you can believe in, it does so much good for building a good following. I'm just going to keep going through this unless you guys have something you want to comment on.
No, keep going. This is good stuff.
I do have one thing to add to being a mentor, and that is, or just being a good person, that kind of goes hand in hand with it, is watch out for holding too tightly to a technique or some little bit of knowledge. I saw this all through school. I don't know if you guys shared this experience, but somebody would learn, all of a sudden their work would get better, like real quick. And you'd say, oh man, show me that technique, or what are you doing different? And they literally would say, no, they're not sharing it, or they, I don't know what happened, you know? And then you come to find out, oh, they went to this special workshop that just dealt with that one issue. The really good people who have good networks and good relationships really do share it freely. I just think about people like Mark English or Sterling Hundley or Jake and Will both. I mean, like, just being able to say, here's how I make it. I'm not going to hide the secret move from you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just be open, because you just got to know that no matter what technique it is, when you give it to somebody else, they're going to make it their own. They're not going to all of a sudden take your work. I think that's always the fear, is that, you know, you've got the special thing, you don't want to give the special thing away, because then everybody will have it. But it doesn't work like that.
No, that goes back to being authentic and being a little bit vulnerable too. I know what you're saying there. Okay, so we've talked about loving them up, connecting authentically, having a shared purpose. The next thing, and this is something I would never have thought of, but that would even work or do anything. But the more I've thought about it and I've seen it work in my own life, it's really helpful for creating a solid, like, a fan base or followers that really are into what you're doing. And that is, create a mantra. And so my mantra, well, the mantra should have something to do with whatever your purpose is. So my mantra is finished, not perfect. And it's a variation off of other things other people have said, but that's my version of it. And people always throw that back at me. When they're doing something, they'll post something and they'll be like, as Jake Parker says, finished, not perfect. So here I am posting it. And it's all a part of that shared purpose thing, where we're independent creators, we're trying to make something, and it doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to exist, that type of thing.
Mine is perfect, not finished.
Yeah, have fun with that. You can make fun of this, but it and it doesn't have, it could be something like, draw every day, you know? Here I am posting my drawing. Got to draw every day, guys. I don't know.
I need a mantra. Will, do you have a mantra for real?
For real? No, but now I'm feeling bad because I don't. So that's why I made a joke.
Me and Will's new task.
So that's going to be our new thing, is to come up with one better than finish, not perfect.
That's a tough one to beat, though.
The Inktober mantra is 31 days, 31 drawings. You know, that's what everybody's shooting for. I don't know if that's the official mantra, but that's what I have on the website. Okay, so number six, listen and learn. Pay attention to the feedback that you're getting from people and adjust accordingly. So if you value that feedback, so if people are like, I really don't like this direction that you're going, and maybe you're just testing it out and you're seeing if people like it, shift directions, you know? For example, my cover that I posted the cover that was original, and I posted what I thought was an improvement. And everybody said, well, we like the first one better. So I scrapped the second one and went to the first one. And I think my followers appreciated that. Lastly, with the followership, host meetups. And this is where you get to actually meet some of these people. It's a great way for not only for you to meet people and to see that there's actual faces to these numbers, but it's a chance for your people to get to know each other as well. So maybe that you go to a convention, a comic book convention, and that's the way that you get to meet people, and people come to your table, can meet each other. And maybe in conjunction with that convention, you have a dinner that night or something like that. Maybe you go to a conference like SCBWI and you just announce, I'm going to be at this conference. So anybody who likes my work, you know, I'd love to meet up. Let's do dinner or something like that. So the thing I want to close with on these three things, mentorship, friendship, and followership, is you build a network by giving more than you take. So it's all about giving. It's all about sharing. It's all about helping. And again, that last point where it's a chance for these people to meet each other, a network is not just made by connecting with the right people, but also by connecting those people to each other. So if you have a group of friends and there's common interests and shared interests, connect them to each other. And who knows what's going to happen there. But what it does is it elevates the scene that you're a part of. All right.
Before you finish, what would be your advice to someone who has you in the beginning, you said you're basically the average of the five people you're around. What if you're the best, you know, the highest achieving, highest, hardest working person in that group, and everyone else is more of a slacker? You know, what should someone do in that situation?
Change groups. I mean, you never stop meeting people.
Yeah.
I mean, like, what if they're your close friends?
You could still hang out with them. You could still do stuff with them. But I think in regards to your work, you have to have people in your life that are going to, what are your priorities? If your priorities are, I just want to have great friends, I don't care about my work, then if your friends are dragging down your work, but you're happy with them, then keep them. If you really want to improve in your work and you want to get better, you're going to have to find that balance. And you want to have great friends. You're going to have to find that balance of how do I spend my time with these people while still finding people who are going to challenge me, who are going to elevate me, who are going to motivate me to better. You know, you might have a bunch of great friends and all they want to do is play basketball. And you really, all you want to do is play some basketball, but really you want to have a killer portfolio. You're going to have to probably ditch those friends five nights out of the week so that you can work on a portfolio. And maybe some of those nights you're spending time with people who also want to make a killer portfolio. So
hey, Jake and Lee, I have some bad news for you guys. We're going to stop hanging out.
You don't have to formally break up with them.
I knew this was coming.
Just start to slowly migrate over. Hey, I want to throw out a challenge to our listeners.
Yeah.
It's a networking challenge because some of you guys may be sitting there going, okay, I got all this stuff. I understand it. But what do I do first? My challenge to you guys is at least one time this next week, so 7 days from now, from when you're hearing this, invite somebody to do something that relates to illustration. It's, you can call somebody up and say, hey, there's this new exhibit at the museum down at the Museum of Art. You can say, hey, there's a gallery opening. Hey, there's a figure drawing workshop. Hey, let's get together and just draw at a cafe. But you should be the invitor, not just look for things that are already existing. You be the conduit for that.
I love it. That's awesome. Does that apply to us three too?
No, nothing applies to us three.
Okay. That can be a new challenge called Invite-tober.
No, I think it does apply to us three. I think we should all, I actually have already done mine. I did it this morning. That's what kind of got me thinking about it is we're doing it. There's a printer in town, a real high-end print, you know, multiple run kind of print make. They do multiple runs for printing, and I'm thinking about outsourcing that. They started doing framing and mounting and all this other stuff. That's really cool. I'm going to go check out this whole new warehouse that they built. First thing I did, call a couple of illustrators and say, hey, I'm going over to check this thing out. Do you guys want to come with me? Because I think you might be able to use it too.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Just as easy as that.
Right on.
You know?
Well, I think we should close with that. We'll close with that invitation. Do you have anything else you want to add, Will?
No, let's close with that. That's perfect.
Can we hear? Is there a play? We're going to put this on the forum, right? So I'd love to be able to see what you guys did for your invite.
That's
would be an awesome thing.
Yeah. So go to the SVS.com, SVSlearn.com forum where there'll be an episode 11 post for this episode. And tell us what you invited people to do and if it happened, how it went. I think that'd be great. All right. So let's wrap it up. No response. All right, everybody. Thank you for...
Well, you do the wrap-up, so me and Will have to just listen. Uh-huh.
All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Three-Point Perspective is made possible by svslearn.com, where becoming a great illustrator starts. Your hosts have been Lee White, and you can find his work at leewhiteillustration.com. You can also follow him on Instagram, at leewhiteillo. Will Terry, and you can find his work at willterry.com. And follow him on Instagram at willterryart.com, but without the .com. And I'm Jake Parker. Go to mrjakeparker.com, and there's links to everything there. And check out all the new work that's been posted on my website. My intern, Aaron Painter, has been working hard on polishing that website up, so check it out. Lastly, if you like this episode, please share it around. If you haven't subscribed on subscribed on iTunes, what are you doing? Go there, subscribe, and leave a review. That way you can be notified as soon as these episodes drop. We also love to hear what you think. We read all of those comments and those reviews, and we love it. It gives us the fire to keep going on this. And like we said, if you want to join in on the discussion, go to the forum where we posted about it there. And that's all. Thanks. We'll see you guys next time.